in Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available for Monday the 16th of October 2017 with me, Daniel Ruiz Tyson, episode 180. I hope you're all well, keeping on doing what you need to be doing to keep yourself going. A week when I started a new library book, I am reading a hell of a lot this year. Well, the last few years, really. I've said before, it is the one thing that enables me to switch off. And I buy lots of books, but I also borrow books heavily from the library. Obviously, I read them indoors with my latex gloves. I bought a pack of 100 on eBay a few years ago. I'm now down to the last two or three pairs. I mark the outside of the gloves. I write exterior on both of those gloves because it is easy to turn latex gloves inside out when you remove them. So I use the latex gloves to read the books indoors. When I'm commuting to the man, I just accept there's nothing I can do here. I can't bring the latex gloves out with me. I can just gel up or, you know, wash my hands better still once I get to the man. But some of the library books obviously aren't in great condition. I have that rule where I don't take out a library book if it's been borrowed within the last 2 years. This library book I started on Saturday hadn't been borrowed for 5 years. Obviously, this is the age now of self-checkouts, so it's impossible to tell. In terms of book stampings, it hadn't been borrowed since January 2012. I began the book eagerly, page one, a hair on that very first page. This is something I've covered in the past in my book, Me, 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 available on Amazon, an early plug there. This is the first time in a few years where I've encountered a hair in a library book. So this was a bit of a setback because I felt I had been making progress on the OCD library book borrowing front. A disappointing way to start the book. And I was on the bus when this happened. You know, when you start a library book, at least when I do, you study what you have in your hands. You look at the condition of the pages, how heavily marked they might be. So the hair threw me. I looked at the hair. I studied it closely. I felt it was too thin to be scalp hair. Too thin, likewise, to be hair from the region from where you wouldn't want to find hair, let's say. I thought, this is going to be arm hair. Looks like arm hair to me. I decided to check the borrowing history, at least the history that was available to me. The last time it was read in the summer months, and this is what I thought. I thought, well, it might have been read during the summer months. This would have been arm hair, so the reader would have been wearing short sleeves. I checked the borrower history. The last time it was borrowed during the summer months was April 2011. And subsequent to that, it was borrowed three times between November 2011 and January 2012. And I'm guessing that might have been a slow reader. Someone took the book out three times. Perhaps they had enough money to be able to turn on their heating at home that winter, perhaps the final year of the Great Recession. And, you know, maybe they were indoors reading the book in short sleeves. At least I told myself that's what might have happened. And maybe if that wasn't the case, maybe if the arm hair didn't belong to that last borrower, it had me wondering, how had they missed that hair on page one? Why did they not try to shake that hair out of the book? Why did they leave it to someone 5 years later to do that? I had a tweet from Big Green Books because I was live tweeting this horror on Saturday morning, Saturday 14th of October. And Simon, who runs the Big Green Bookshop Twitter account, ventured that it might be animal hair, which, you know, it might be. It's possible. I don't know enough about animals to be able to comment on that. I think my experience of animals extends to avoiding the muck on the streets, on the Lambeth streets, but also to being assaulted by Spanish Canu's dog, Toby, back in the day. In September, October 1990 on the Angeltown estate in Brixton, my cousin had asked me to change the timer on their video. in Brixton. The clocks had gone back or forward that weekend, I never know which. And I was changing the timer, and I was just mounted by the dog, a vicious dog, a dog that my aunt's old neighbours on Angel Town still talk about. So I certainly had dog hair on me on pretty much every item of clothing that Sunday afternoon. But that's as far as it goes with me and animals. Now, I mentioned on last Thursday's show, episode 179, that I was about to go on this writing break. Before I did, the man was having a Macmillan Cancer baking day. Now, I was never going to participate. I've never baked a cake in my life. I'm not going to start now as a middle-aged man. You know, a baking show comes on television, I turn it off. I'm leaving this world never having made a cake, and I'm fine with that. I can live with that. But still, I can't fault the cause. You know, it's for a good cause. I've got no problem with that. I thought I'll buy a cake. Initially, I'll admit that wasn't my early reaction. I just thought, this is going to require some participation. This is going to require a donation. And, you know, I'm not really a cake eater, I have to say. I lean more towards pastries and, you know, custard tarts, and I limit the custard tart eating. I think I might have covered this on an earlier show. It was the day that Mickey Boyd and I went down to my old school where we made a film for Nelly. And I think just after that, we went back to the cafe to catch up and to talk about how I was going to try and put the film together and, you know, how we'd found the trip back to that school. And Mickey ordered a couple of custard tarts, and we were sat at a different table away from the toilet table, and I was facing out towards the cafe. Mickey was facing at the loo, so he could just eat the custard tart freely, and he was going at it. He was like a beast. I was being more careful with my bites, and I ran into trouble early on the custard tarts. And I never forgot that Mickey said, as delicious as custard tarts are, that they force you into pulling all kinds of faces that you would normally associate with the gurning of the elderly. And it is true. It's a tough pastry. It's a delicious pastry, but it is a tough pastry. And it was just cakes that people were making at this Sir Macmillan Cancer Baking Day. You know, I limit myself to eating the odd pastry indoors. You know, it's a messier cake. Is a pastry a cake? I suppose a pastry is a pastry. It's messier than eating a cake. So it's not a vice that I indulge in too often. I eventually relented. I bought a slice for Spanish Carnu. You know, she needs to eat more. She's recovering well now from her surgery, at least in the last 10 or so days. She'd had that dip where she looked terrible, but the last week or so she's got a bit more colour in her face, I'm pleased to say. She's feeling a bit more optimistic about things. She's starting to appreciate that while she was able to eat reasonably well until her surgery, that she was incorrect in saying subsequent to her surgery that you know, she was harking back to this time before the surgery where she had a greater appetite because, you know, she felt better. And, you know, I had to say to her, but you weren't better. You had this thing growing inside of you that they've removed now. You might not have your appetite back, but it will come back. You need to eat a bit more. You are better than you were when you were eating more. So, you know, we're all doing our bit to try and encourage her to eat more. So I bought a slice for Spanish Carnu. I took it to a tower block in Stockwell. And ideally, you know, you know what I'm like. I like my money's worth from things. And these slices of cake, I have to say, were very, very small. And I got this small slice of cake, and yet despite its small size, there were no boxes available for me to take it home. And I explained to one of the people at the Macmillan baking thing that was going on. I said, look, I'm taking this to Spanish Carnu. I need a box to transport it there. I'm not going to eat this here. Everybody else was having their cakes there. I need a box. And I tried a range of boxes. There weren't boxes big enough. So the cake had to be turned on its side. It was getting slightly squashed. I add here that that's not to say it was a big slice of cake. The boxes weren't big. The boxes were small, and yet the cake was still too big to fit in those boxes. Or rather, the boxes... No, I'm getting confused here. The boxes and the cake were both small. But don't think for one minute that because the cake slice wasn't fitting into the boxes that I was trying, that the slice of cake was too big, because it wasn't. It was a minuscule amount of cake. And, you know, I was struggling to not say anything about this. And eventually, before the day was out, I did raise this with the people behind it. £1 a slice, you expect more, I said. It's for a good cause, came the reply. Put the cause to one side for a moment, I said. You know, forget the cause. I can't argue with the cause. It's a great cause. But let's just put the cause to one side for a moment. Just pretend that I'm buying this cake because I want this cake. If I saw that in a shop, something that small, I'm not buying it. I made that clear to them. You could have bought your aunt another slice, they came back. I wasn't going to spend £2 on two small slices of cake that together didn't make up what I consider to be a normal slice of cake. So in the evening, Thursday evening, I took the cake over to Spanish Carnu's. No idea what it was, by the way. It was sponge cake icing, caramel coloured icing. The cake was on its side. I explained to Spanish Carnu I'd bought her a bit of cake, that she needed to eat a bit of cake. I could make her a coffee. She could have the cake with the coffee. She saw the cake. Qué pequeño, ¿no? That's very small, no? It is, I agreed. ¿Sabes que el stress puede darte cáncer, lo sabes? That's annoyingly small. Do you know that stress can lead to cancer? I could see that she too was getting agitated by this small slice of cake. I wasn't arguing with her there. A tweet from Moribundity now relating to haircuts. I think it was show 179 where I was going through an extensive post-mortem of the haircut from the week before. You know, I wasn't really too happy with it. I think I'm getting over that now. Moribundity tweeted, been on an 8-week haircut cycle for a while, always taken aback at rapid transformation to bouffant at 6 weeks. I think that the bouffant tends to appear with me these days around the 4 to 5 week mark, and that's why I went back to the barbers the week before last. If you'd like to tweet me regarding your bouffant, at 1607 West Egg, hashtag bouffant. It is great to hear from listeners, especially new listeners. Kind of does justify doing another run of these shows, or you can get in touch with the show as well via email, drt. Available at westegg1607.co.uk. Been a while since I've given that out. Now, a hygiene fail to report for Saturday, 14th of October, 0810 hours. I was travelling northbound, making my way to the cafe. A man sat behind me on the bus, stretched his legs out under the seat, or at least I thought it was a man at the time, stretched their legs out under the seat and trod on the back of my left sock. There does seem to be, in addition to the fact that I do seem prone to weak sock elastic, there does seem to be a thing going on with men's trousers at the moment. The fashion does seem to be for shorter trousers. And during my previous stint with a man back in 2012, around the time this show, in fact, launched in late 2012, and I had to buy office wear, I do remember that the trousers were longer. And I do like longer trousers. When I started getting new gear ready for the man, when I had to return 6 months ago, I did notice that there was a change in the length of men's trousers. And in fact, I remember actually one thing I didn't get a chance to tell back in the spring. I remember that I was trying to work out which were the types of trousers that I normally prefer to wear when I was with the man. And I went on this website, the shop's website where I was going, just to see what they had. And then I went in store and I couldn't work out how much a particular pair of trousers were. There was an issue with the website. The website wasn't telling you how much a particular pair of trousers were. There was an issue, basically. And I went into the shop, into the store rather, and I showed them their website on my phone, and that I couldn't work out whether these were the right trousers, and they actually said to get the full information on that particular pair of trousers, I had to download their app, and with that app, it would give me the information. In fact, I think I had to download that app, and then I had to run my phone over the tag on the trousers, and that would give me the information. And it was along those lines. I wrote it down at the time. I don't remember the specifics, but it was along those lines. And I thought, this is ridiculous. Are you telling me now that it is not enough to visit a website, that all the information you need is not going to be in the website? And then you go into the store to ask them for that information, but they can't give it to you. You have to download an app. I'm not downloading an app. I'm not downloading an app. That is preposterous. Anyway, I have for the last 6 months had to contend with a couple of pairs of trousers that are too short for me. That coupled with weak sock elastic, or even socks that have seen better days and have been washed too often, that, you know, do not grip the shin properly. So that's been a problem. And recently I've had to switch desks, so my legs are more exposed. I was originally sat in a corner, just as I am in the cafe where I have my own toilet table. I had my own corner by this pillar. I wasn't exposed to the man fully. Now that's gone. So, you know, if I'm wearing short trousers now, if my socks aren't maintaining their height on the shin, I'm in trouble. And I think that particular morning I was having trouble with my socks. I felt this shoe on the back of my left Achilles. I don't think it touched bare skin, to be fair, as short as the socks were that morning. But the sock was definitely tainted. I knew that when I got back to the flat later that day, I'd have to remove the sock when I got in. Of course, I'd have to remove the pair of socks. I wasn't going to wear one sock. I wasn't going to wear the right sock and then bring another sock from a pair. I wasn't going to unmatch a pair of socks to cover this. You know, you clip one sock, the other's got to go. The problem for me until I got home was because of the weak sock elastic, the chances were that day, and so it panned out, I was going to have to be pulling up my socks between 30 to 40 times that day. And in terms of handling the left sock, it was going to be a germ fest. It was so disappointing to leave the flat with a clean pair of socks, only for something like that to happen within minutes of boarding my bus. And the interesting thing is, I did actually see the culprit disembark. They got off the bus before me, and it was a school kid, a very lanky school kid, no more than 13, had a kid and play high top circa 1990, and they had no idea what they had done to me that morning. You're listening to Daniel Ruiz Tyson is available, the other side of the midlife crisis. Ways, as always, to support the show. You can do all your Amazon shopping by clicking on the Amazon referral link at DanielRuizTyson.com. What happens is Amazon recognizes you've gone to them via the referral link on my site and kicks back a small percentage of whatever you've purchased back to my work, and that doesn't cost you anything. And, you know, with Christmas coming up, this is the biggest opportunity of the year for the website to again start paying for itself. Further ways to support the show, you can rate and review the podcast on iTunes. That really helps. I've had one review since the show came back a couple of weeks back. I've not been able to see the review. That's iTunes being difficult. But that really does help. And, you know, not just a rating, a review. That does make all the difference. Perhaps, too, you might even consider making a secure donation to the podcast via the PayPal button that is positioned by each of these available podcasts as they appear on DanielRuizTyson.com. I know that for many, myself included, these are straitened times. If you can afford it, do please consider it. Now, of course, Friday was Friday the 13th, and I don't think I'm a massively superstitious guy. I think with me, it's more a case of OCDs that I'm, you know, trying to battle on a daily basis. Friday the 13th, I've always been wary of these since Friday the 13th of January 1984. And I recall that really well because I went to a classmate's house who lived in Clapham, slap bang in the middle of Clapham Common territory. And our school had a rival school in that area. Myself and Mickey Boyd went to Clapham College, which was in Clapham South, but in Clapham Common you had a fearsome school, Henry Thornton, a notorious South London school. So notorious that some of the kids who lived in the Clapham area from our school were allowed to just paperclip their school badges onto their blazers rather than have them ironed on. Because the idea being, once you were making your way back home to Clapham, you would just remove your badge as well as your school tie, of course. And I'd gone to this classmate's house, and I remember there was a live match of the day that Friday, and I can't remember what the game was, but that was the first year of live league football in this country. ITV would do Sunday games, BBC would do Friday games, and my mum was picking me up, I think, around 7 o'clock that evening. But my classmate and I were given some money by his grandparents who he lived with. And we were going off to Wimpy in Clapham, where I would later celebrate my 12th birthday that year. And we ended up getting chased by some kids from Henry Thornton because I remember my classmate friend was wearing his leather jacket. I could have just said friend there. He was wearing a leather jacket, but I was still in my uniform, and they spotted the badge and they tried to stop us, and we had to leg it. And it was quite a fraught experience, a difficult experience for me. I didn't really enjoy that. And ever since then, you know, I've been wary of Friday the 13th. Anyway, it was my first day of leave from the man. I was hyped. I was pumped up like the chicken in our supermarkets. That started the day working brilliantly on the script. You know, I was using the new laptop that had taken me 6 months to save up for. And I'd had a brilliant morning, an absolutely brilliant start to the script. I had to go through Brixton first before heading back to South Lambeth to the cafe to do a couple of hours there. And from Brixton, I hopped on a bus to Stockwell, where I needed to get off to get to a cash point. And at that point, I clocked a local that I know goes to the cafe. And, you know, I just didn't want the small talk. I didn't want any distractions. I thought there was a danger that in not staying indoors all day, because I felt it would do me good to also, you know, break up the day and go and do a couple of hours of writing at the cafe. You know, I'm always worried that on that journey, I'll lose momentum. And that wasn't the case on Friday, thankfully. But, you know, I was just, that was in my mind as I was making my way to the cafe. I was very determined on Friday. I didn't want any interruptions. I certainly didn't want any small talk. And, you know, had this regular seen me, they might have expected me to walk to the cafe with them from Stockwell Station, which was reasonable. It's only a, you know, 7 to 8 minute walk. But I'm being very lazy right now. I've got a weekly bus pass. I've had a weekly bus pass for the last couple of weeks. I felt, you know, that I'd been walking too much given my old foot injury. And now that I've got bus passes for the foreseeable to give my injury a break, I do like to get my money's worth. For example, even if one bus journey is shorter, let's say if I can take one bus straight to the cafe, you know, after I leave the man, I'll actually take two or even three. I kid you not. I'm taking multiple buses to justify the extra expenditure on the weekly pass. That's what I'm like. You know, I was like that with the cake. I wanted more for my money with the cake. I want more for my money with a bus pass. I like a bargain, basically. So I was taking this first bus, got to Stockwell, got off at Stockwell Station. I was at the bus stop. I saw the regular. They were at the NatWest. I saw them leave. I went to the ATM. I took out my money. I could see them walking on northbound on South Lambeth Road. I decided to wait for the bus. The bus arrived quickly, but people were piling on. And, you know, I was worrying the bus would arrive at the cafe at the same time the regular had reached that end of South Lambeth Road. And that the small talk would just happen then. I really wanted to avoid the small talk. I was toying with the idea of getting off a stop early. And my mind was made up when a well-known old South Lambeth hustler in all, you know, he was wearing an all-black tracksuit. They decided to board the number 2 bus via the back exit to avoid paying. This isn't one of the new buses where you've got the 3 entry points. So this, the number 2 bus in South London, you still have to tap in front of the driver. This guy got on at the back of the bus, rather the middle of the bus. It was packed. He probably knew the driver wasn't going to see him. And this guy, I know from past experience, this guy really does reek. And paranoid. Friday the 13th, I thought, I've got to get off now. Something's going to happen if I stay on this bus with this guy. Unfortunately, I was a little slow, and an old school hustler snuck on, rubbing past me in his unwashed black tracksuit as he ascended to the upper deck. I got off the bus to stop early. You know, I still got off. I'd just gotten off slower than I'd have liked to. I tried to put the physical contact to the back of my mind. I sighted the cafe regular walking on ahead of me across the road. I then set off on foot behind them. I was about 50 metres away. I was, I suppose there's no other word for it, I was stalking them in a desperate attempt to make sure they weren't cafe bound and I might escape the small talk and I could just go in there and get on with my work. The cafe regular stopped off at the fish shop. I crossed to the other side of the road to get a better look at them as they chatted to someone so I could, you know, get a better visual on them. Then they stepped into the fish shop. And at that point, I crossed back over to that side of the road. I ran past the fish shop and I made my move into the cafe, only to see the urinating man of Stockwell, SW9, sat outside the cafe with his oxygen tank. Not to be confused, of course, with the urinating dwarf of SW8, who to this day is still AWOL and has been since 2013. If you're new to the show, if you know Stockwell, if you know South Lambeth, if you've happened upon trails of urine on the street in SW9, there is a 45% chance that Stockwell's prolific urinator is behind that trail of urine. I had no option but to give the urinating man my hand. As I gave him my hand, I could almost hear my right hand groaning. At the last moment, I switched hands, gave the urinating man my left, which threw him. It was an erratic handshake. He gave me that kind of look, "You're left-handed now?" I reached my toilet table. He was already heading inside to take a leak at that point. We'd actually shaken hands as he was making his way in. I knew I was in trouble. This guy doesn't do short visits to the cafe, and he'll do about 3 or 4 toilet trips during a single visit. And as I stepped in, as I made my way to my toilet table, I just thought to myself, there's my Friday the 13th right there. There it is. It's 1984 all over again. Moments later, and I'd kept my 2 spring jackets on. I had 5 layers on, and I'd kept both spring jackets on at that moment because usually as he exits the loo with his hands unwashed, of course, he will tap my back or shoulders as he exits with those filthy hands. And I wanted to protect one of the 2 jumpers I'm taking into the winter. But this time he came out, and as I was about to put my script and laptop on the table, because I often do that, I'll make it look like I'm really busy, which I am. You know, when I'm in there, I'm not relaxing, I'm busy, I'm working. But I like to cover the table when he's in there in a way I don't always do, just so he doesn't stay at that table. I don't want him touching anything. But I didn't have time on Friday. And he came out and he put those unclean hands on the table. His palms were on the table, both of them, gripping the table. Trying to take a break from the weight of the oxygen tank on his back, he started asking me how Spanish Carnu was. I just kept looking at his hands. As soon as he left and went back outside, I got a tissue. I ran the tissue under the tap, squirted hand wash onto the tissue and did my best to discreetly wipe my table when I returned to it. I still, at this point, hadn't washed my hands. You know, I wanted his first loo trip out of the way. I wanted to see him sat back at his chair. So for a few minutes, after wiping the table, you know, I still had the bus, I still had the cash point, and I still had the handshake. All those germs I still had on my hand, both hands, but especially the left hand, which I'd used to shake his hand. I could feel a rare facial expression forming as I thought about all of that. Soon as he was gone, soon as I saw him sitting back down, and, you know, I knew I had at least half an hour before he returned for another toilet visit, I went back through those swing doors, I washed my hands again, and this time I gave it both verses of happy birthday before I removed my hands from the sink. Sure enough, the urinating man of SW9 made 2 more toilet trips that afternoon. The last one was exceptionally lengthy. If I could have packed my stuff up at Benny Hill speed when he was in there and got out of the cafe, I would have. Because when this guy is about, you need one of those coverall forensic suits. He is just horrific hygiene-wise. And I can hear him urinating into the bowl. And I'll come to that in a moment. But I know that he's not a urinal man, because you always hear the toilet seat being handled when he's in there. And of course, if you're a new listener, you may not know that it is a bizarre cubicle in there. It's got a toilet bowl and a urinal next to each other, and it is really just a cubicle. It's the strangest toilet I've ever seen for men. And, you know, I can always hear him handling the toilet seat. And knowing him as well as I do, I don't think he will be handling that toilet seat with a tissue. After his second trip, I went into the loo just before his third and most destructive use of the facilities that day. And there was just urine everywhere. And I knew it was him. I don't think I was mistaken. I knew it was him. He is not used to toilets, this guy. This is a man who urinates in the streets with abandon. To tell him that he's got to urinate into a bowl or into a urinal, he can't do that. He really can't do that. And this experience with this guy marred an otherwise brilliant day, because I got through 35 pages of editing and I felt so good. I felt so good. You know, this is what I am. I'm a writer. The early starts, the 6 months of rising at 6:30 and working from the cafe from 8 in the morning before I turn myself over to the man, with no laptop for a number of those months. The sacrifices, stopping the show, you know, for 6 months. And I could feel that all paying off on Friday. And that was really pleasing. I hope I can build on that. And that is it. That is today's show. I hope you guys enjoy your start to the week and do what you do well. You can only do your best. Shoulders back, people. Keep on walking towards the sun. I'm back on Thursday. I'm Daniel Ruiz-Tyson. And today I have been available.